Okay. Thank you. All in favor, let's just try waving our hands to see if that works for everybody. Chris, you got you. Okay. All right. So any negatives, any abstentions? Then the minutes passed as written.
I will tell you what and Julia
Rich,
said
to me. We're having a really hard time hearing because you have multiple meetings happening in your kitchen.
Well, it works, except you can't talk when you're muted.
It's the joys of
kitchen
is the joy.
Like,
yeah, this is like working. This is working from home.
Anyway, so
I may have to turn it over to Linda because we have two important Zooms going in the same room. When and each person is like chairing it. So, so let me just open the meeting for the public forum. And I think we had a request from Cynthia to do that. So I'll mute after I ask Cynthia if you would give us a few minutes in public forum for your discussion.
And then would you like me to take over at that point, Rich?
Yeah, until I get it figured out with that.
Okay, thank you.
My name is Cynthia Detman, and I'm a resident of Wingspread Mobile Home Park, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Committee to Protect Ashland's Mobile Home Parks. And several of us are participating in the Commission's work group with Kathy, Collie, and Rich to talk about mobile home park protections. And at our last meeting, Rich reported to us that there appeared to be very minimal public input planned for the upcoming process to develop the city's housing strategy. I sent Linda a document. Is it possible you could share screen that, Linda? What I did today is just did a little bit of research to educate myself about how does citizen involvement work with land use planning. And I've pulled up a copy of, on this document, goal number one for land use planning is citizen involvement. And it talks about that there has to be opportunities for widespread public involvement. There has to be, the public has to be able to be involved in all phases of the planning process. And the reason I'm bringing this up, I should go back to Rich's report to us, that his impression from the first meeting of an advisory group for this planning process was that all that the group was going to be planning, or maybe Eco Northwest was planning, was something called an open house. And I'll get that to get to that in a minute. So the law requires that there has to be widespread public involvement. There has to be a feedback mechanism for the policymakers to respond to that public input. And there has to be money set aside, adequate money, for public involvement efforts. And then I looked at the OAR regulations, and I looked at the engagement part. Can you scroll that up a little bit, Linda? And it talks about, thank you. It talks about what is involved for public engagement and how that works. And it says, if you look at 2A, a list and description of stakeholders who will be impacted and people who are consumers of needed housing and producers of needed housing. A summary of the feedback from each group, a description of how that feedback is used to produce the strategy, and then an evaluation about how they can improve in the future housing engagement practices. On the next page, I've given you a copy of what Eco Northwest reported when they developed the previous housing capacity report. And it says the City of Ashland and Eco Northwest solicited input from the public at a virtual open house. So it sounds like that's what they're planning to do again for this housing strategy. I'm not sure how that got under the radar screen, but apparently all there was an open house for 15 days. And it said 394 people attended. It doesn't say anything about what the feedback was or how it was used. This virtual open house is not accessible for low-income people, for people who are homeless, for people who are disabled. The way they got the word out, I don't know, because I didn't participate in any of that. I didn't live in Ashland at the time. But I would argue that that public open house is not meeting the requirements of the law or the regulations. So I'm making a request to you, the Housing Commission, to ask the city and Eco Northwest to create and publish a detailed plan for both in-person and electronic public input at several key phases of this process. And I would argue that the plan should include how much money is set aside for public input as required by Goal 1, Number 6, what events are going to be targeted to mobile home park residents, homeless populations, senior citizens, people with disabilities, workers and low-income families, communities of color, and I would like to add students. And then I would argue that the event should include a mix of easily accessible locations and well-advertised digital events. And I think they should be publicized at homeless shelters, senior centers, etc. So I'm just asking the commission to hold the feet to the fire of the folks who are doing this housing strategy. We in the mobile home community it's been suggested to us, and we want to participate in public hearings where we can sit face to face with the policymakers and say, here's what we think would help preserve affordable housing in Ashland, and we're going to be lobbying for a zoning change to protect us. So that's just one example of public input that I think needs to be heard by the policymakers face to face. So that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Your input is very timely. It's on our agenda for this meeting. I don't know if you want to stay through the meeting. We have several items.
I will stay. Thank you.
Great. Glad you're here. Thank you for that. We have, I'm sorry. I don't know which of you is actually Jennifer Sawitzki, because you both have, it's you. Okay. we have asked for an update on the Columbia Care Project, and she's here to give us that update. So thank you for joining us. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We're super excited about this project, and it's coming along so nicely. And as we get closer to opening in the next several months, we thought it would be a good idea to come and check in and provide an update and share just all the good work that's going on there. So I was thinking maybe first that we could do some introductions. And if it's easier, I can just introduce all of us, and then we can go from there. So I'm Jennifer Sawitzki. I'm the Communications Director for Columbia Care Services. We also have Cindy Dyer, and she's the Property and Asset Management Director at Columbia Care. She plays a really big role, has been since the beginning, all the way from the funding and through development. And then she also oversees the team that will support the project through property management and maintenance. So she's involved all the way through, very knowledgeable. I'm glad to have her here today, because she can probably answer questions I may not be able to. And then we also have Delcia, who is our supportive housing program manager. And she supervises all of our non-veteran supportive housing programs in the area. And she's also a qualified mental health professional, and she provides clinical oversight. So she has a lot of knowledge and expertise as well. And then we have many, many other team members involved, of course, in the project. I was thinking I would just provide a little bit of a brief program overview and some next steps. And then I would let Cindy talk a little bit more about how the project came to be. I'm sure most or not, if not all of you, have some knowledge of that, but maybe not as much as you would like. And then Delcia can talk a little bit about the really cool element of this affordable housing project, which is supportive services that go along with it. And so she can talk a little bit about the staffing that will be on site. So I will just get started. So for those of you who don't know about Columbia Care, we are a nonprofit behavioral health agency, and we do provide a full continuum of care across the state and here locally as well. And one of our biggest passions is providing affordable supportive housing. We own or operate more than, I think we're somewhere around 35 programs locations. We provide housing and housing supports to both civilians and veteran populations, which is great. we really firmly believe that the combination of housing and then the right supports promote safety and stability and self-sufficiency, not only for the individuals that are living there, but for the community. We also know and have a lot of years experience seeing that when you make sure individuals' basic needs are met, and you understand that housing is really foundational to everything else, that then people can work on other issues they may be experiencing in their lives. And so this housing project is really going to combine all of those things. Rogue Ridge Apartments will be obviously a brand new construction, 28 units of affordable supportive housing. It's located at 1651 Ashland Street. I don't know if any of you have seen it as you drive by that area. It's right behind Rogue Credit Union. The complex itself offers 23 studio units, one two-bedroom and two three-bedroom units for future tenants. There will also be two units reserved for staff. And staffing will include not only a resident manager who's going to live on site and be available 24 hours to provide housing support, but we will also have a residential and peer support specialist who are going to provide some other supportive services that just promote tenant success and well-being. I'll let Delcia go into that a little bit more, but it's things like skills training and supported employment education and tenancy assistance and help with housing stabilization and community navigation. So just some really cool services right there available to folks. Our Rogue Ridge tenants are going to have access to an on-site activity room and office where they can participate in community building activities, engage in structured learning, find social connection that's really meaningful. And we just are really proud to be pairing those things together. It really helps. We will have a Columbia Care Management property management team who will be offering tenant services and support around moving in or out of their apartment, rent collection, maintenance and repairs, plus any general concerns that tenants may have regarding their tenancy or their unit. A couple other cool Rogue Ridge features. We will definitely have some ADA accessible units included. We have multiple community and seating areas within the building, including on our Sky Ridge. It's really a neat part of the program. So we have elevators that help individuals get up to, you know, multiple floors, and then they can use the sky bridge to pass through and get to another unit or another area of the building. But also it's beautiful mountain views, and there's little seating areas within that area as well. So there's another way to provide some community connection where people can get together. The project was designed by architect Jerome White, and he's a longtime local resident of Ashland who designed the building to make sure ensure congruity with the surrounding buildings in the area. It's going to fit beautifully into the community, and special attention has been given to quality and livability. Something we're really proud of is that the project was developed according to Earth Advantage certification to ensure eco-friendly good standards throughout development and ongoing. And then there's also going to be just some really nice outdoor areas, green areas with covered seating. There's a bike room within the building so people can store their own personal transportation. Just really, really a lot of features. The last piece I will say on my part is that we're looking at finishing construction. Cindy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we're thinking late August this year into maybe September when we actually may open. As you know, with construction, that's always a bit of a moving target depending on what's going on, but that looks like the most recent projected date. So, Cindy, do you want to talk a little bit about how the project came to be?
Yeah, thanks, Jen. Thank you, everyone. Hi, everyone. It's been a while. We've been working on this, but that's not really unusual with new construction projects, but this one in particular. So we first received our Ashland Affordable Housing Trust Fund grant back in 2018. And that was to help us purchase the land. And the land was originally, for those of you who may not know, was all owned by Rogue Credit Union. And they knew that they didn't, when they bought the land, when they were going to build a branch, that they weren't going to use the entire lot. And their goal was to sell the excess land that they didn't need. But they also had some personal goals of what they wanted in their own building. And they proposed a shadow plan. But when I say a shadow plan, their idea was that when they sold the property, they were hoping to sell to some organization or group, if you will, that would do something to give back to the community in some way. as they said. And so having done development for a number of years for another organization, I happened to work with Jerome. And so he was the architect there. And so he kind of brought us all together and we were talking about it. But I should say back up is when Rogue decided they wanted to do something, and affordable housing always came to the top because the Valley needs it. Ashland needs it. There's always a great need. And we could get the density on the site that everybody, you know, was hoping for with the zoning and everything. So they kind of reached out to all of the nonprofits that they knew of to see if somebody was interested in doing some affordable housing. And at that time, I had come to work for Columbia Care. And as I said, I knew Jerome. And so he kind of said, hey, would you be interested? And I said, we might be interested, because that's part of what Columbia Care does, as Jennifer has outlined. And so that's kind of where it came to be. And we said, yes, we were very excited about doing that. So we went through the process of now buying the excess land, as I will say. But when I say buying the excess land, part of that is we had to get us, the site survey. We had to split the lots and get the new addresses and everything. So that takes some time. And in that, we also had to get other grants besides the Affordable Housing Trust Fund grant, which was great because anybody that writes grants knows that the local money is really vital to securing any state and federal dollars because it shows local commitment and what you're, trying to do. So it's extremely helpful and important. So anyway, so we sought some grant funding, and I will tell you the first grant funding that we got, the state was had a timeline on when we could expend it. And because the zoning, or not the zoning, but the lot line divisions and things were taking longer, it was decided that it was in our best interest that we had to, in a sense, give the state money back to open up those funds for other organizations, and we would have to take a new run at funding. And part of that was we also realized that we needed more money. So hence we're into 2022, but it's really going to come to fruition now, and we're actually going to have a building. So it takes a little bit of time. But anyway, so we were also fortunate. So through this whole process, we were also fortunate. Columbia Care was selected as one of the 10 participants in the original permanent supportive housing cohort that the state put together. And what was so unique about this is part of the state's goals was to provide permanent supportive housing for homeless individuals. And our target has always been with veterans and with mental health, behavioral health. And so it all kind of fits in there. But the unique thing that they were doing is they were first time that the state has brought together several resources in one funding cycle, if you will. So it really is a partnership all the way around. So not only with the local community, we're working with our continuum of care, the coordinated entry process. So for those of you that know about the continuum of care that we have in the Rogue Valley and the state of Oregon. So what that does is we received money in going through this process for construction, money for project-based vouchers so we can make sure that the units are truly, truly affordable to everybody. And it also brings around the dollars for the services. So to support those positions that Jennifer alluded to, that Delcia will oversee to make sure that all of the supportive housing services are all provided to the residents, offered to them right there on site and off site as their needs and desires are. So it's pretty, pretty exciting that it's all in one package, if you will. So we're really excited. I will tell you that it's the first time in my career, and I've been doing affordable housing development for a number of years, where we get down the line and we've always had some contingency where you never know where prices are gonna go. But I think everybody knows what's happened the last few years here in the Valley between the fires and COVID and everything. I feel like when we embarked and we finally said we are moving forward with construction, it was probably the most uncertain time that I've ever developed. I felt like I was in the middle of the street and you had to make a decision. Either way you went, you were running in front of cars, whether you were going forward or you were going backwards. And so, and it was a decision that together with our director and everybody else, we said, you know, we've come this far. It's that important. We'll do what we can. We're going to make this work. And so we're moving forward. And I will tell you, my contractor has been wonderful. He's not been able to stop all the price increases, but we were fortunate enough that we pre-bought a lot of lumber at the beginning, and we were pre-buying some things in order to keep the prices down. So far, so good. We're holding our own, and we're going to make it to the finish line. So that's pretty exciting. But for anybody that knows about that, it's really challenging. The other exciting part of that is we are working with the continuum of care, and specifically the coordinated entry. And what that specifically means is that's our community wait list for housing. So the wait list for housing and the applicant referrals will come through the coordinated entry wait list. So there are different access points for that. Columbia Care hopes to become one of those access points, especially through our downtown clinics that we have in that are located in Medford right now. But basically what that does, it's a community wait list for housing, and there's we will be serving some of the most vulnerable citizens in our community. So it's really a great connection there with the community and the partnership. And so I'm really excited that we're coming very close to it. And like you said, I love the building. It's like in Jennifer, the sky bridge that was designed and the beautiful views and stuff. And of course, when you're out there on a really nice day, it's gorgeous anyway. But so we're just moving forward. And as you said, right now, we're thinking that, you know, our completion will be August, September, with a hope at this point of starting to lease up possibly in September. That might be October at this point, but it's still coming real close. It's going to be definitely before the end of the year. So I'll turn that over to Delcia to talk about the support services.
Thank you, Cindy. Good afternoon, everyone. I was ready to say good morning. It's been a long day. Thank you for the invite to talk about Rogue Ridge program. I'm excited to come to your community. Rogue Ridge is going to be staffed by 3 full-time staff. One will be the residential specialist. The other is the support specialist, and a resident manager. That resident manager will be on site 24/7 for on-site support. The difference between the residential specialist and the support specialist is the residential specialist is considered a subject matter expert. How to go into the field to get housing resources, to negotiate, different benefits for residents, just to kind of help them along the way in regards to that. The support specialist is to help with coping skills in regards to, and across the board, all of these positions, they're going to be kind of helping clients with skills training. But the support specialist is a peer, which means they will have life experiences in regards to having a diagnosis themselves, and can be really relatable to kind of what the applicants are going through. The target population are individuals in your community who are vulnerable and have behavioral health challenges. We're looking for a diverse and an inclusive model for our population at Rogue Ridge, and to be culturally sensitive. Some of the program services that we'll be providing is, again, the skills training. Simple things like cooking, cleaning, shopping, budgeting, personal hygiene, how to utilize public and medical transports. We'll be networking and developing a partnership with community resources like primary care providers, behavioral health, or substance abuse disorder treatments, supported employment and education services, anything along those lines. Also, we will be working with the clients about housing stabilization, relationships, how to mend those relationships with family, with friends, with your neighbors, because this is going to be, you're going to have neighbors living in Rogue Ridge. Symptom management. We're going to be focused really on meeting the clients where they are. And, you know, it can be kind of a roller coaster, right? So we may have to go back and kind of refresh and reteach and kind of repeat some skills training, because we sometimes work with applicants who have been chronically homeless. And one comes to mind is we just housed him in one of our other programs here in Medford. I'm housed here in Medford, and he has been chronically homeless. And so being in a homeless community, you always have someone to talk to 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So the first week in his apartment, he was knocking on other people's doors saying, "Hey, you get up, you want some coffee? It's time to get up and talk." Well, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. That was kind of part of the problem of doing that. And so we kind of talked with him about how to live in the neighborhood and talked about the skills training in regards to that. And he was very appreciative, and it explained through his therapy and counseling and kind of got him, did a reset to talk about appropriate boundaries. So I don't want to take up much time, because I do want to allow some time at the end to ask questions about the project. So that's all that I have in regards to services.
I did want to add one quick thing before we open it for questions. And I think this is a really important thing, and it's about ongoing like community introduction and opportunities to come check the place out, and what kind of partnerships will we build, and opportunities to provide feedback and that kind of thing. So the current plans are to have an open house, an in-person open house, COVID permitting. We're hoping everything's going to go well with that. So it looks like we'll be able to provide tours, and people can meet staff, and people can ask questions about the program and check out the units. So that will be really awesome. In addition to that, we're going to do a little virtual tour video series. So for those who maybe prefer that, they can go online and, you know, kind of get the virtual tour of the place. We have developed a website called communitycares.info, and we set that up for the primary purpose of providing project updates to the public. It is live and active, so it's just communitycares.info. And then there's a find a project, and you can look for Rogue Ridge. And then the other thing we'll be doing as well is we will be meeting ongoing with community partners and interested parties. There may be even an opportunity for us to reach out to one of you to join us in that, but we always do that with new programs to make sure that they're running well, and that we have provide an opportunity for feedback, to ask questions, to make sure we're providing the very best services and being a good neighbor and all of those things. So there will be that ongoing opportunity as well. So we'll be starting to put that together.
So we are at the end of the time we allotted for this. Sure. And I really do want to allow for some questions. We are incredibly excited that you're coming to Ashland. And we've been waiting with bated breath to see this day get here. So anybody want to ask a question before I ask mine?
Rich has got his hand up.
Rich.
But he's muted. There we go.
I can't get, I've told everybody this story, but what happens on that land is so amazing now, because 15, 20 years ago, it was the Lower Pines mobile court, and there were a lot of great folks. And part of the amazing part of it, that this location is one of the best locations in Ashland for this population of folks, because it's right on the transit lines. There's food and all the kinds of services that are all around there. And I remember a young Native American guy who was in a wheelchair, who had an old funky mobile home, and had it all set up for disability services that he needed and all of that. And he could get around the city and all of that because of that location and where it was. And that's what was wiped out. And just everybody remember that the city agreed to purchase that land and put affordable housing on it back then. and the owner refused to sell, and so it sat vacant for all that time. We could have had this, but thank God that Columbia Care and Rogue Credit Union has stepped forward to make this happen. And I guess just one of the things I was thinking about, because I really love this whole notion of permanent supportive housing that you're doing and the kinds of training and things. And I just wondered whether you could get a connection to the bank, because it's right next door, and help people with banking services. I don't know, but it just seems like such a natural. So that's all I got to say. And I'll be there whenever you guys have the openings.
Echo.
So I actually have a copy that I've saved of the 2001 public hearing on the closure of the Lower Pines, which includes some incredibly eloquent testimony from a young whippersnapper named Rich Rohde. and I will send that document. I dug for it in the city archives online. I'll send a copy of that document. I turned it into a Word file. I was going to send that to Linda Reed, because I think it's relevant also to the discussion we're going to have about preserving mobile home parks now in Ashland. The historical context really matters with this particular site. It was a situation of grief and rage and anger in 2001. And to see that finally turned into something positive is a little bit of good karma, finally.
Thank you. I have a question. Do you have dedicated beds? Are there, like, for example, beds dedicated to mental health clients?
Well, all of our clients will have a diagnosis of sorts in regards to having a diagnosis. The acuity will vary, Okay. But all of them will have a mental health or behavioral health challenge.
Okay. And are there dedicated beds to veterans?
No. We missed that. Sorry,
you cut out. I'm not sure. We heard the question.
The question was, are there dedicated beds for veterans?
Oh, not in this particular program. But we do have a lot of supportive housing for veterans.
Anybody else have a pressing question? You're okay with moving on?
Can I ask about what the rents are likely to be and how the voucher system will work?
Well, the rents are basically, they're going to work just like a voucher. So if you're familiar with the housing vouchers that Housing Authority does, so it'd be based on 30% of their income, roughly. Okay. I mean, there's a factor, so it's very affordable.
Okay.
And I just, one comment, as I'm listening to Echo and to Rich, and I'm remembering, I was at those meetings with Lower Pines that really, boy, this has been a long time. I just didn't realize how long. Yeah.
Linda Reed.
So we are not the only ones who are super excited about this development coming to Ashland. I have been getting a lot of calls, and I have just been sending them to your administrative line because people are just anxious. They want to see how they can get in there. So let me know what the best thing to tell people who are calling, who are interested in learning more about your development, and whether it would be something that they could get on the wait list for. I mean, I'm hearing that people need to have some sort of mental health diagnosis, but I guess what would be the best way for me to either let people know how to find out what the criteria is, or is that posted on the communitycares.info, or is there a cleaner, better way that you want me to?
If there are general questions just about the program in general during the development stage, those can go to info@columbiacare.org, or they can contact me directly at 541-858-8170, which is that admin line. If they're really interested more in tenancy and that kind of thing, that's probably not me. And so I'm going to let Delcia answer that or Cindy?
Well, yeah, I've been directing people at this point, Linda, just so you know, because I'm learning the coordinated entry process. And I've just kind of generally told people that I don't really have an exact process right now, but if that they contacted me in June, that hopefully by then I would know that information. So just as a general overview, not taking too much time, as I said, there's access points. So Access as an agency is one of those agencies that does the application, but I'm hoping that I can say at that point, Columbia Care is an access point as well. So I'm kind of waiting until I am a little bit more versed myself in what that process looks like.
And we can make that a little bit more public. We'll try and
yeah
get that information.
Great. Thank you both.
Okay, one more question, Joy, and then we're going to really need to move on.
So you mentioned it, that it's based on a 30% of income. What about the folks that may not actually have any income? How does that work?
So the project-based vouchers, essentially that the state guarantees, I'll say me, the project owner, rents at 60%. So it works for the tenant pays 30%. And if they have no income, then essentially they pay no rent for the time that they start. So it increases, people are recertified. But that's where it makes it really affordable for them to at least access the housing.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yes, just thank you.
Really very grateful to have you here and very excited about your this project coming to fruition.
We appreciate your support and you'll be getting an invite to the open house.
All righty. Thank you. Okay. We're going to move on. The Housing Production Strategy Advisory Committee, Echo and Rich have an update for us. This is going to be a regular item on our agenda. So we're going to expect updates at every meeting. But they're getting started and this is it. You're on.
Rich, you want me to talk or should you talk? I'm not sure what he's saying, but.
Why don't you do the intro and then I'll do kind of the part about the outreach portion.
Okay. Linda, can you let me share screen? Let me see if I can do that.
Yeah, you should have permission to share screen.
Okay, let's see.
I can. Yeah.
Yeah, did you call?
Here we go. So what you're looking at is sort of the issue that both Rich and I picked up on at the meeting, our first meeting. So this is from the PowerPoint presentation from Beth Goodman from Eco Northwest. And it's a pretty extensive document. But the part that I know Rich and I both kind of latched onto is that there's very limited opportunity for public input. If you look at this screen, you'll notice where I'm not quite sure what you see and what I see on the screen. So sorry if this is confusing, but the draft housing production strategy happens between July and February 2022 to 2023. And the only public participation is this one little open house that happens sometime later in the summer, as I recall.
And September.
Yeah. And I'm going to stop screen sharing because I think it's distracting. But that seemed very odd. So the link to this whole presentation is in the chat. Linda Reed put it in the chat for you all. And I suggest you kind of all look at it. I was on the Housing Capacity Task Force as well. That was sort of the preliminary work leading up to the housing production strategy. To answer a question from earlier that Cynthia raised, there's a section of the housing capacity analysis report, which is over 100 pages long, that goes into some of the detailed feedback from that virtual open house. that went into the housing capacity study. So there actually is some fairly rich, there's a lot of comments in that document. You kind of have to dig for it because it's a big, huge document. And it was virtual because of COVID. There was really no way at the time to safely have anything like face-to-face gatherings. This is a different situation, though. And Cynthia, I'm really glad to see that you dug into the ORS on this. I don't know. I'm not sure what else to say. Brett, you want to help me out? I'm going blank.
Well, let me say that the meeting had about a dozen or more folks. Two of us were from the Housing Commission. Unfortunately, the people that were from the Racial Equity Commission and the Climate Justice Commission, who are supposed to be part of, were not part of it. There were several staff and several people from the Planning Commission. And that's all great, other than the need for the racial justice and the climate justice are incredibly important. And the attitude that I brought to it was that this is an 8-year plan. This is where, if we've all read those huge long document of options for housing production, those are existential to what we do for affordable housing in Ashland. 8 years. And so what we do here is really going to set the stage for how we can address affordable housing and in the case of like Columbia Care, permanent supportive housing, all of those things, protecting mobile parks and other existing low-income programs. And the fear in my mind is that we will not hear from all of the people and there won't be a place for them to really weigh in. If you look at the way they've scheduled our meetings, we only get, I think, two more meetings before next year to look at what they're doing. None after the draft is produced. The Planning Commission gets three of those meetings. And as we pointed out, there only seems to be one open house. When we asked about, can we get a more robust outreach and opportunity for citizen participation, they said that the money was the key, that they're not getting paid to do more than what's listed in their project. And if we wanted anything more, we should bring it back to the Housing Commission. So in some ways, they kind of kicked it back to us. Linda, go ahead. But our job, I believe, is to design a really robust and outstanding and racially equity outreach program. Go ahead.
Okay. So I wanted to, I think Echo is correct. Echo Northwest, not Echo Fields. Although
you I know. That's why I always pronounce it Eco Northwest because it creeps me out to say Echo Northwest.
I know. Sorry.
It's a personal thing.
Yes. So let me read you what's in the contract and I can send it to you. So the contract for this project is a grant from DLCD, the Department of Land Conservation. We have an IGA with them through the City of Ashland and they contracted with Econ Northwest. And this is what is in the contract. The consultant will help develop a public engagement plan in consultation with the city and with Ashland's Committee for Citizen Involvement, which is the Ashland Planning Commission. The public engagement plan will ensure early input is provided by advisory city commissions, including the Housing and Human Services Commission, Planning Commission, and an ad hoc advisory group, the advisory committee, which is Echo, which is what our Echo and Rich are a part of, created for this project. Additionally, housing providers, housing advocates, and housing consumers will have opportunities to participate in the development of the HPS through hosted events, virtual or in-person, online engagement, and public outreach as determined by the Committee for Citizen Involvement, which is the Planning Commission. The engagement will prioritize underrepresented communities within the city, including renters, low-income households, Hispanic, Latinx residents, and other racial and ethnic minorities, and immigrant or refugee communities, veterans, people with disabilities, seniors, agricultural workers, and formerly and currently homeless people. The engagement efforts will build from the city's Housing and Human Services Commission's public engagement efforts and may be coordinated with Ashland's annual community housing forum provided for under HB 406 for severely rent-burdened communities such as Ashland. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, engagement will seek to prioritize outreach to underrepresented groups to the extent reasonably and safely possible at this time within the limited engagement timeframe, and resources of this project will emphasize outreach to agencies or nonprofit groups that represent or work with underrepresented communities. While there will be a good faith effort around outreach generally and particularly to underserved communities, it is understood that the current situation with the pandemic presents unique barriers to engagement. In addition, outreach and engagement discussions are likely to occur via video conference, teleconference, telephone calls rather than in person. One form of outreach will be compiling stories of people with unmet housing need in Ashland. These stories will be integrated into the HPS report to illustrate the types of housing needs in Ashland and, to the extent possible, connect these unmet housing needs and strategies included in the HPS. City staff and members of the city committees, most notably the Housing and Human Services Committee, will compile these stories and provide written summaries and possibly pictures of people. The consultant will include the stories in the HPS report. The consultant will help plan for the engagement, including helping to define the questions and topics for the outreach and methods to solicit input. The city will connect the consultant with existing networks for engagement and facilitate the discussion and engagement. So these are the things that I think that we're missing from this discussion, which we had talked about a long time ago, but I wanted to remember to bring it back before us, is that one, the commission is doing two different outreach events that are not listed in the timeline, but then will be provided back. And so the city commission, this commission, has the leeway to shape what those look like and how you will do the outreach to get there. So we will hold a housing rent burden forum, which we do every year, right? But this time we're going to do it much earlier. And I actually was looking at the July meeting as a potential date for that. And I have already spoken with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon to see if they could be a part of that. So, I mean, I think as we move forward, we're going to have to start scheduling time on our agendas for planning these events and for talking about what we want them to look like. The other piece that we told the consultant was that we would be doing compiling these stories of unmet housing needs. But other than that, I think, you know, going back to what it says in the agreement, the consultants can help us sort of define questions or topics, but it's really up to the commission on how you want to do outreach or how you want to bring these things about. And then I do want to bring it back to a reminder that it is all of the information and all of the public hearings and all of the timelines, even as they get updated and adjusted, are listed on that housing HPS page, which is linked, which I know can be very difficult to find. And so certainly, like, however we publish that to make it more streamlined for people, all people to get to. But that at every public hearing, everybody has an opportunity to weigh in at that time in front of our Housing and Human Services Commission. Each one of those is a public hearing opportunity. So those two meetings, those three planning commission meetings are also public hearings that are open to the public and can take public comment in each one of those. And then at the two city council hearings that will invariably be scheduled at the very end. So at each of those time frame, each of those public hearings will have opportunity for input. And those are always published on the city's website, in the newspaper, and then I think like on the RVTD, we have like a page or whatever that shows all that, like what's coming up. So those are the three ways that we're doing it now. I mean, there are some other things, like we have the utility bill mailer. Certainly, I think, Cynthia, some of the things that you brought up, doing sort of posting handbills and information in certain areas, like at homeless shelters or at the manufactured home parks or at senior facilities. Generally what happens, at least for me with CDBG, is that I will do a mailing to all of the affordable housing providers with the information so that they can post them on their properties for their residents to see what's happening and when we're looking for input. So those are all ways that we've done that in the past, and we can certainly do that again. But I just wanted to make sure, I don't think ECHO is really talking about Econ Northwest is really talking about these side things that the commission was asked to do at the very beginning of this project. So I just wanted to bring that forward for us to think about.
Could I ask a question, or am I just intruding?
Not just yet. Okay. Hang on for a minute. I want to get the conclusion of the presentation by ECHO and Rich before we go into discussion.
Well, let me say, I put together, and I don't know where it is right now, a one-pager, just kind of bulleted points about who we should be reaching out to, and about 5 or 6 or 7 different ways in which we could be doing it. And it's on the agenda to discuss our commission involvement in the HPBS project. My thought is that we can't design it here, but we absolutely need to design it. And so I just have to go back to the old work group proposition that has worked for us in the past, to bring some people together to look at really strong outreach, and particularly I was disappointed that the racial equity group wasn't there, because
actually they were there, Rich.
They didn't say anything.
Julie Gillis from OSF. I have her name down as having been there.
Oh, okay. Well, they didn't say anything, and I think the key is that this issue, if you read the 47 pages of options that we have to deal with, and you can come up with some different ones because they don't include the zoning for mobile parks, for example. If people have awareness of what those are and have an opportunity to really engage around those issues and what they would like to see, we can get way more people than ever to open up to say, we're going to have the planning commission have when you can come and talk to them when they have their meeting. That will not get the right numbers of folks. So my proposal is that we form a work group and come back to this group with a proposal that is really robust. And it doesn't have to cost any money or very much money, but it has to be kind of significantly different. In my mind, people of color and the homeless should be at the top of the people that we're reaching out to, and they will not be reached out to unless we do something around that. So.
And so, I have a lot of concern about not reaching Ashland's working class in general. People making, I'm looking at the annual income, median family income. It's supposedly $73,000. Well, that's hilarious. Folks who are doing most of the work that makes the rest of our lives quite comfortable here in Ashland are maybe making $25,000 to $30,000 a year. So I want to be sure that we're reaching out to those folks who are doing the work that makes our quality of life possible. And the way to do that is being out on the street. I was looking at Rich's list that's in the packet for today. So figuring out a way to do focus groups or tabling on the plaza or in front of the shopping cart. Just really, putting some shoe leather out there seems to me to be absolutely vital. Relying on people to come to us, you know, whether that's, you know, responding to a mailer, responding to a website, coming to a meeting, that's great. But we need to be going to people rather than always expecting them to come to the experts and the elected officials. That means it's going to take some of our time, because this work is not going to be done by Eco Northwest. This outreach work is going to get done by those of us on the commissions. That's very clear. I also have some, I made some notes. I was looking at, back at my notes from that meeting. So the Joy Gil Livni was in the room for this meeting. And I know you know him quite well. So one of the things that he stressed in that first meeting as a developer is that in order for him and people like him to produce more housing, they need to have less uncertainty, they need to be more certain that a project will be approved. He needs to see the city be somehow able to reduce risk to the investors, to the developers. He wants to see less complexity in proposal and approval processes from planning. And that was something that was really clear in the Housing Capacity Analysis Task Force too. From him, he was in that group too, along with Bob Kendrick. So there's the developers' voices, I think, will get heard more clearly than regular folks' voices will get heard. It's going to take some effort. And that's why the outreach stuff matters, to kind of balance out who's heard in this process. There's a lot of things I can go on about this forever, and I'm sorry for taking up a lot of time. But another thing that I asked at the meeting that has bothered me is I asked Beth, who's really competent at her job, whether the housing production strategy could fail in the end. So we do all this work, we come with a great strategy about how to, you know, increase housing options across the spectrum of need, from homeless to, you know, sort of more normal sized family homes. And her answer was, yeah, it could fail. Like we could have this great plan and very little would actually ever be achieved in the plan. And if that were to happen, the law has few consequences for it. And that really worries. As I was putting it at the meeting, I quoted myself in my notes, the city would not get spanked if we failed to actually make any of the things that we propose happen.
So I'm going to stop you here, Echo, because yes, I want to have an opportunity for people to ask questions. So I'm going to start with commissioners, and I still know you want to say something, Cynthia, but let me start with commissioners. Questions for Rich and Echo.
But I would offer up that I am really into the shoe leather. So I'll be the first one that'll sit out on it with a table or go hand stuff out or, you know, whatever. I would like to get more involved in that way. I think it's really super important, and I'll offer up my time.
Thank you.
So, Linda?
Yeah, I connect the tabling to the compiling stories of people with unmet need and illustrating the types of housing needs in Ashland that we have. And I think, you know, trying to get a broad variety of those unmet housing needs compiled together. Another piece of that is to connect it back to those strategies. And, you know, we have that huge long list of strategies. And this is the part that I think is almost disconnected from the tabling, is that no one is going to look through those like that in this tabling event. There's so many. I think if the work group could distill them down to something maybe simple that could be put on a board you know, and then people could sort of see it that way. Like, is this sort of the issue that is impeding, you know, your getting your housing needs met? And some of them are just not going to probably apply in that, because some of them are developer based, right? Like, is it infrastructure? Like, no one's going to say, you know what, the city doesn't have enough infrastructure, and that's why I have unmet housing needs. I mean, some people might say that. But developers would say that, you know, and so I think we'll have to go through and sort of pull them out and simplify them. But I really see that tabling as a really good form of getting, compiling those stories of unmet housing need that then we can link back to those strategies and say, these are the strategies that address these recognized housing needs among these different populations.
Yeah. And, so I would also like, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, part of the picture that we didn't talk about in the first committee meeting for the housing production strategy is talking about rents, and the city has very little ability to do anything about rent.
Right.
So this is really focused on building stuff, and not so not really addressing the issue of any kind of rent control. That's very difficult under Oregon law. A little bit less difficult than it used to be, but it's still really hard. So, you know, I think a lot of the need is going to come from renters, about how do we stop rents from climbing, you know, up to the maximum allowed under law now in Oregon. Well, it's really frustrating.
Maybe if we can have the tabling happen before the rent burden event, or maybe after. I mean, it feels like if you're in the tabling and people are talking about rent burden, then we could say, you know what, we're having a rent burden forum that's coming up, and it would be great because we will address those things at the rent. Like, here's what's as we have in the past. These are the things that are within the realm of the city's control.
Yeah.
I would just like to suggest that we consider having some of the tabling maybe at the piecemeal and on mm-hmm. the SOU campus in places yes. where people already are that we're wanting yes. to read.
Yes,
Cynthia, you've been very patient, but would you like to say something?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about how the mobile home residents in Portland, for example, got their city council to pass a zoning change to protect them from being closed on the basis of protecting affordable housing. And the powerful movement that really changed officials' minds and planners' minds was groups of residents coming to these hearings with picket signs and children. Mm-hmm. And so I still think that face-to-face with the officials, with Eco Northwest, whoever it is very important. That psychological pressure of citizens talking about not just a story and a picture and in a report somewhere, but an actual human being and groups of human beings speaking on their own, perhaps shouting at a meeting, has an impact. And so I want to see in person, you know, and I and others can help get those people to those meetings. But for example, on the mobile home issue, you know, we can bring, I don't know, 100 people to come and have signs and pressure to get their position heard. So I still think that the psychological and political impact of human beings face-to-face with policymakers is important. So that's it, yeah.
Thank you. So the request I heard from Rich is that we have a subcommittee bring back at our next meeting a strategy for what we wanna do and when. And right now, I think we have Rich and Echo ready to work on that. Do we have someone else who's willing to join them to work
Joy.
On
Joy? I think Joy said she would.
Joy.
I will. Okay.
Yep. Terrific. Is it realistic for you to say that you could make a report to us by the next meeting?
Sure. We'll give it a shot.
I'd like to add into that. It's sort of the same thing, but also the suggestion about how we provide the education about what's in or what could be in the production strategy so that people are able to really know what we're talking about as they become involved. So, yeah.
Yeah, because it's really about maybe improving, getting more units available for rent, but it's not really going to be about rent control or cost. And that distinction is going to be tricky for people to wrap their heads around. The rent control thing is, I don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah, it's bigger than Ashland.
Yeah.
So anything else from anyone on the commission? You're listening to this, so you're like excited about moving forward? Kathy?
Yeah, I can't take on doing another work group, but I really am all in on boots on the ground advocacy and outreach. So count me in for tabling, for outreach in different communities.
Well, you know, and
give me direction.
And I think we have to table out at Bear Creek Park.
Absolutely.
I mean, technically, you know, I know technically that's not within the city limits, but it is us. I mean, I think that's Ashland.
It is. It's Ashland tax base. Yeah. It's 97520.
Exactly. So Ashland, I think, Linda, is the Bear Creek Mobile Home Estates, is that actually in the urban growth boundary? It's not even in the UGB.
There she is.
Hi, it's Gina.
I did want to acknowledge that that's Gina that's been on the phone all this time.
Ah, that's what I thought.
Did you want to say something, counselor? Or are you just showing up?
Hello, everybody. All of the above. Excellent meeting. I've been listening to the whole thing. I've been commenting. I've been driving like sit here and throwing my 2 cents. I look like a maniac. Anyway, so I had a question in all of this, the conversation. Rich, I could not agree with you more. We need to have everybody at the table. And I applaud you and Echo for the work that you're doing. But I have a question when it comes to how many meetings do you meet? I know it's limited, like 5 meetings or 6 meetings or something like that, this group. How many meetings do you meet?
The Housing Production Strategy Group?
Yes.
Let me look at, I actually have that on another screen. So hang on a second. Let me doodle over here. I'm not going to share screen. Okay. The engagement touch points, this is slide 24 out of 29 from Beth Goodman's report to the Housing Production Strategy Group. There are 8 interviews with developers and service providers, 1 public open house, stories of people with unmet housing need compiled by city committees, 5 advisory committee meetings. So that's Rich and me and the other people on the committee. 2 Housing and Human Service Commission meetings devoted to it. 4 planning commission meetings. And then the 2 city council presentations. So that's pretty much what Linda went over just a few minutes ago. But it's slide 24 out of 29.
And so in July, Linda Reed, that's when we're going to have our rent burden meeting.
You know, that's what I'm suggesting, sort of based on the ECHO's Econ Northwest schedule. I'm so sorry.
Okay. I know, it's really
Yeah, because I'm thinking that might be, although it's a hard time too, because anyway, we'll have to talk about it and think about what will work best. But just trying to get that input in ahead of some of the meetings that the commission is going to have with Econ North or with the advisory committees and Econ Northwest. And, you know, I was talking to Brandon about it earlier today, because even though Econ isn't really going to be doing as much outreach and they're sort of relying on the city and the commission to do it, like one of the things that Brandon and I talked about, because he and I have like biweekly meetings with Econ Northwest to talk about like, okay, what are the next things? What do you need from us? And like, give us the materials so we can go over it and make comments before you send them out to different, you know, for the different meetings. One of the things that he and I talked about is that he has set up that page and he's posting all the information and letting everybody know, you know, when the public hearings are. But within that, there is an online survey piece that will be posted. And so he is thinking that he can post that up here in the very near future and that it will just be ongoing and that it will probably be more open-ended, not sort of numerical values. And really, I mean, what we're getting to, what the end product is, right, is a list of prioritized strategies. As Rich said, there's a lot of strategies right now that are articulated, but we're not going to move all those forward because there's too many. It's more than 8 years worth. And so how do we get to a list of prioritized strategies, even including, you know, things that can be added as well? But how do we cull down that list? And I'm always going to three-legged stools. I don't know why. That's an analogy in my head, right? That there's, like, if he has this online piece, the survey, that's going to cull some, right? So we're going to get sort of a list from online that through the public input process, some are going to rise to the top. And then there'll be staff recommendations. There will be recommendations from the advisory committee. And then, you know, through the public processes, through the commission, through the planning commission, and then what's going to move forward to the city council is that prioritized list, theoretically, that's coming from all of these groups. And hopefully, when all of the prioritization happens in all of these realms, that what we're going to come out with is that some are across the board priorities from all of these groups. I don't know if that will happen, but if that did happen, then that would be a clear priority. And so hopefully culling through and saying, like, here are the touch points that everyone is saying that these are the things that we need to do. And then that's what we would push forward to the city council. Mm-hmm. At that time, Cynthia, speaking about like your strategy, which I think is a great strategy and that we've seen work time and again, if there's something that didn't make it through that process, right, then that doesn't mean that groups still can't come and advocate for those pieces. You know, whether it's your group, not that I don't think your strategy would make it, but you know what I mean. So at each point through those processes, it is not an end, right? It is just trying to cull through with the most input to get to a product that is doable, though Echo, as you say, it may not actually be done.
Yeah. And I do want to, Reese, just be warned, I'm going to talk to you about doing some tabling on campus before graduation, because that's going to have to happen end of May, beginning of June.
Yeah.
And maybe Chris can help us with that too. I will certainly show up and sit at a table out in front of the SU and try to collect stories from students. And I know that there are stories to be collected.
Great. Gina.
Thank you, Linda. And thank you everyone for your input. So I wanted to sign up also and say that I am willing to sit at a table because I don't know who said it. I was driving at that time, but more than one person mentioned going to the people. I think it's important because people get things in the mail. I don't have time. I'm cooking, I'm working, I'm feeding my kids. So I am all about going to the people. I know so many young folks work at the co-op. So many people are servers. So many young people are working. Are essential workers, the people who have, and I think Echo said, make our lives easier. And these are the people, and I'm willing to go to them. So whomever's taking the list, sign me up, please.
Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? Chris, did you want to speak?
I was just curious on the type of questions we're going to be asking when we're doing all this to really hone in on the data that we're kind of looking for. So I'm hoping the next time that we meet, we maybe have more of a refined process.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, it's clear we have good foot soldiers here, but we're going to need some instruction. So if you guys can come back with not only what and when, but maybe some training notes or just coaching about how to move forward. I think there's strong support here. All right, ready to move on? Thank you, Rich and Echo. You are tackling a big thing and you're doing a great job. Thanks. So I think we're going to move now on to the business of our commission. I don't know about you, but I'm very much noticing the absence of Heidi and Jackie at this meeting. Their terms have concluded. So this is us without them. And shucks, it's hard. a lot of institutional memory walks out the door with Heidi Parker. I would like for us to find a way to thank them and acknowledge them more than an email. If anybody has any ideas about that, maybe we can, I'd be happy to chat with Linda Reed about it and come up with a way to.
And can we do that? You know, it occurred to me when Tom ended his term a year ago, I don't think we did anything to acknowledge him either. Right. And we need to do that belatedly too.
Yes, I agree. So be thinking about that. If you have any thoughts, kick them to me or to Linda Reed, and, you know, and let's see if we can find a way. It would be easy if we were in person, or easier if we were in person, but that doesn't mean that we are not going to be acknowledging them. It also says to me that we still have open seats on this commission, and to start recruiting people, Cynthia, you might consider this, that would be good members of the Housing Commission, because we need to rebuild our ranks. We are ready to take nominations for officers. The two positions we elect are the chair and the vice chair. And the secretary, thankfully, Liz is doing on behalf of the city for us, so we don't have to do that part. Here's my thought. You can self-nominate. You can nominate somebody else. That somebody else has to say they're willing before we add them to the ballot. So I am open for nominations for chair.
Linda, this is Rich. And so I understand that you're willing to do it. And so I would make that nomination. Would you like it for me to just run this?
I would.
So, yes. Let me finish this part and recognize, as Linda mentioned, that the work of the commission is really for all of us, but we also need that chairperson who's leading the meetings and kind of helping us move forward for all of that. And that's open to everyone. So we have had a note, a email, or the notion out to all of us that we can self-nominate or make a nomination for folks. And let me just say that we also have the vice position open. And both of those are really important, because it really, through the course of a year or more, it takes two people to kind of help be there and guide along. So I guess I'll go back to the first question. I made a nomination for Linda Rapon. Are there any other nominations for chair?
I would like to make for Linda Rapon as well, if she's willing.
Okay, so this is kind of a formal way of doing it. In an informal way, we could just kind of all agree. But we have a motion to elect Linda as our chairperson for the coming year. All those in favor, let's just do it by hands this time to see if we can do that. Who am I missing?
Echo just vanished.
That's right. She had to vanish. Okay. Right. All right. So are there any opposed? So the motion is carried. Linda will be our chair for the coming year, and we'll open up nominations for vice chair. Linda.
I would like to nominate Echo. And I have spoken with her about it, and she agrees that she would be willing.
Those are really important things to have her willing to do it. Christopher?
I was going to also nominate Echo as well.
Great. Okay. So I'm just going to say that was a second for that position. So all in favor of Echo as vice chair, same hands, we'll see that. Okay, and any opposed? There don't seem to be any. So Linda and Echo are going to be the leaders for us for coming year, and thank God for willing to step up and do that. So then I'll step back.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm willing. I think I know what I'm getting myself into, but we'll see. We also have on a request that we have a representative for the Social Equity and Racial Justice Commission, that there's a slot on that commission for someone that's a representative from that. Is that true? No, that's not true.
Yeah, no. They are trying to do some outreach to each commission. And so they are asking that we send one or more people to their May 5th meeting, which is next week, next Thursday.
Next Thursday.
Yes.
Okay, so it's not to join a commission. It's not to take on something long term. It's to go to one meeting.
Although it could turn into something longer term.
It's not impossible. Those things happen. Who's available and interested in doing that?
Do you want me to talk a little bit about what the request that I received? Okay.
Yes.
So it is kind of outlined in the memo, but essentially, you know, the search commission is a newly formed commission that's just getting started, and they do have a list of goals and a mission that they have been given. And I don't know, Gina, are you the liaison to the? Okay, and maybe Gina could talk a little bit more about this. So what? Actually, maybe, Gina, should I just turn it over to you and you could talk about what they're wanting?
Thank you, Linda. I will jump in and share a little bit. Is that, Linda, I believe you're on the track of that. This commission has been tasked with reaching out to other commissions. So because I am blessed to be the liaison for both, of course, I said, you've got to talk to the Housing and Human Services Commission. And it's so important because looking through an equitable lens, it's important for both commissions, all of us to look through that equitable lens. So, and it's important that we all know what each other's doing. I remember being on the Housing and Human Service Commission and Linda linking us up with the Planning Commission. And I was like, oh, so that's what they do, so that we can know how we can work together. And whomever speaks to this commission, when I was driving, I heard that we've only had one person show up on this commission doing the work that Echo and Rich are doing. And to be able to share ahead of time at that May meeting and to be able to say, you know what, this is what we're doing. And let me tell you why it's so important that we suggest you do this. So maybe Rich or Echo could be there too. So if it's two or three commissioners, I think it would be great. And to be able to ask, how can we best work together? This is what we're doing. And then Emily and Anya, they could speak to the about what the other commission is doing. I know that the search commission is going to speak shortly with the Public Arts Commission, which is important, and planning, and so is this commission. So I think to be able to share, this is what we're doing and maybe the importance that why they need to show up, and just to have a conversation. And then I think it's good too, if you feel a connection, maybe meet offline, go have a coffee and make that connection, because like Linda mentioned, it could be long-term. And I'm hoping this will be a long-term connection, a long-term meeting for both commissions.
Well, and talking with Ann Seltzer, who's the commission liaison, so the city counterpart on the search commission to my role, it and this is something that we've also talked about it in this group before, is that there's a lot of overlap in what we're doing. And, you know, this commission has some purview over some social equity pieces, like the fair housing piece that is within the mission of this commission, is to oversee fair housing issues. Many of you will remember the analysis of impediments to fair housing choice that was adopted, two years ago, that outlines action steps on how to create more inclusion and equity within the city. And so I think being able to have a conversation with the search commission about the work that you guys have done and are doing, and then the work that they are tasked with doing, and how those two things overlap, and then the ways that we could coordinate on both of us getting our goals met with regard to those goals that address housing equity or social justice and equity. So those were the things that I was thinking. And then also at one point, I think, I can't remember who brought it forward, if it was Jackie Bachman who wanted to adopt a triple bottom line, or we looked at a variety of tools in order to make sure that the grants that you were recommending sort of met those social equity goals. So I just feel like there's a lot of different points where you could coordinate, this commission could coordinate with the search commission. And so whomever wants to go, if you want any materials, or if you want any to meet with me or talk with me on the phone about it before, just to sort of recap anything that we've done, I'm happy to do that.
Okay, so volunteers, I'm available to go. Rich, are you available to go also?
Yeah, I got it down. I can do it. Yep. We'll do it together. Good.
Cool. And this is a Zoom meeting, right? Anybody else? Fabulous. Thank you. So before we go into liaison reports, I would like, Linda, when you give your report, if you can give some report out about the very strange city council meeting last week. Or maybe Gina, in your report, like what happened with our proposal? I don't know which one of you wants to tackle it, but everybody needs to hear it.
I'm going to let Gina do it.
All righty.
start, and Linda, you can finish. But so the recommendations that came forward were Aura, Maslow, and Rogue Retreat. No, it was Rogue Retreat, Habitat, and Aura, right?
Yes.
And so the question was, okay, how can I say this? We have, Linda's over there cracking up. We have, we all know we have a housing need here, right? And so it's a question of where is the money going? I'm just going to be very frank. You get X amount of dollars. Where is the money going? How can we measure this money at the end of the year to make sure it was spent on ABC? Habitat for Humanity asked for 60. They got 60,000. That's wonderful. But something that I believe a lot of questioning was around, is the money going for navigators at Aura? Is it going for building an elevator that's needed, or additional rooms? Right now it's come down to brick and mortar, right? Habitat bills, I can drive down the street, I could see it, I could touch it, I can feel it. When you give other people money, where is that money going directly to? So that is kind of where that conversation got started, and then everybody put in their thoughts and their feelings around it. Because there's such a need for housing, and to see one group get X amount of dollars and then not to be able to say this money is going here and this is what we're doing in the end game, it's just kind of up in the air and it's vague. So I was thinking at the end of that meeting, honestly, is that if there were a way, and I believe the commissioners talked about this before when I was on the commission, if there was a way to say, okay, here's my $55,000 and this is what I'm doing with it, A, B, C. At the end of the year, plus and minus, the balance, you know, yes, I did A, B, C, okay? Because it's like to have X amount of dollars and you give somebody for consulting, okay, that's for consulting. And then we have to go back into the pot and get some more money to actually do whatever this consultant came up with. So it just kind of consolidating the funds, measuring the use of the funds and putting it towards brick and mortar. Because I mean, from our first presentation that I was listening to, I applaud Columbia Care. I'm grateful for what they're doing. I can drive down the street and see it. And I believe that the residents of Ashland, they want to be able to know, okay, this is where the money's going. This is what we're doing with the money, because we all know that the need is real.
Can I add to that?
I got something I want to add to it, is okay. That our commission is an advisory commission. Our only power is the power of recommendations. And those recommendations we do with incredible integrity and a lot of work about reading page by page, hundreds of pages, about understanding the work that Rogue Retreat does, that ORA does, that Habitat does. We spend a lot doing that. And the staff really adds to that by really coming up with recommendations that fit the needs of CDBG or all the other things. And that takes hours and hours and hours of work. And so our best thing when we make a recommendation is that those recommendations be accepted, mm-hmm. or somebody else has spent hours and hours and hours of work looking at all those grants. So what happened in the meeting was there was a recommendation to overturn our recommendation. The end result was, let's take the money away from Rogue Retreat and give it to ORA without any thought about what that was about. Just that's what it was. And it almost passed. The mayor said, no, we have some real problems with that. And it ended up winning 5-1. But what we have to watch is that our recommendations have to come with the knowledge of everybody that we have studied them, we've gone into them, we have unanimous recommendations from staff and board members. And when we make them, they may change them, but they sure ought to have really damn good reasons about why they do it. So that's my only thought about what happened. It almost went the other way. But they did. The end result was they accepted our recommendations. Those recommendations are damn good, and they're going to be helping a whole lot of people. So that's it.
Can I jump back in, Linda? So something that, thank you, Rich, for bringing that up, because I don't know how that escaped my memory, but it almost did get overturned because of, you know, right now, Rogue Retreat shelter, the pallet shelter, is on rented property. And every time a grant is given to Rogue Retreat, it just keeps it afloat. And I appreciate all the work that this commission does, as does everyone else. However, when this commission has read piece by piece, like Rich said, you are more knowledgeable than some people that are on council, because and council has so many different moving parts. However, to be able to have a property, whereas we don't have to pay for rent, and Rogue Retreat can have a solid property that is owned by the city, and every time we get grants, funds, It goes to enhance and build that shelter up. If anybody's been to the pallet shelter, you know that structure is kind of falling apart, you know, and now we have to take the money to keep people working there, to pay the rent and keep us there until we have to write another grant, or Linda's running around trying to write another grant to keep us there another 6 months, 4 months, what have you. Well, good news is for anybody who was there, I was kind of putting in my 2 cents again. My first request I ever made being on council is, let's see some land that we can move our permanent shelter to. Good news, our city manager emailed me and he goes, Gina, would May the 5th work? I mean, May the 6th, I'm like, oh no, I won't be here. However, we're looking at May the 13th. And we are gonna go as counselors, and I'm gonna see that if one of you wanted to come and tag along too and check it out, absolutely, Linda, I'll write you down and look at that surplus property because it's owned by the city. Why do we have to pay somebody rent if we can have access to water, electricity? Come on. So I'm just grateful that our city manager is listening to us, right? And what the work that you're doing is great. And I don't know if I was very eloquent at the meeting when I was just like, oh, why can't we just do this? And so our city manager heard us. And so we're doing that on the 13th. I'm gonna be taking pictures, taking notes. If you want to come, you know, we can go and we can see how we can have a permanent year-round shelter to help the residents of Ashland. And all the grants and all the money can go into that and not into rent. So we're doing this, everybody.
Wow.
That's great news.
It was an agenda item on the city council that I thought was going to take about 10 minutes. It took over an hour. It was a long conversation, and I guess this is the best news to come out of it. The other thing that came out of it was, even though counselors are not necessarily well informed, there is a lot of interest in let's do something. That it went on that long because there was interest, and there's a need for some education. I mean, the some of what they didn't know was kind of staggering to me, quite frankly. But there is interest and now support from the city manager. This all sounds really good.
Yes. So welcome to council meetings, 10 minutes, yeah, right. About an hour. So.
Whatever. Yeah. So Linda, do you have more that you would like to add just from the staff report?
You know, about the meeting, I think.
Or just in general.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I thought it would be a quick item, and in the past it's been a quick item, and I thought it was a good discussion. And this has come up, I think, almost since the middle of the pandemic, you know, is that we got all this extra money from the state and federal governments to address issues. And it was just such an influx of money, but we just had to keep using it for emergencies. And at some point everyone started to say, I wish we could have some time and some spaciousness to really like think about, you know, the future, and not to just be doing these knee jerk things because we have to. And I think that I felt like that's where the council was coming from. On the flip side, this wasn't that time for that discussion. You know, that discussion is really about something else, not about the CDBG or the, you know, it's like this part's a done deal, really. And so you really just need to decide but you know, if you want to have that discussion, great. But that blows our timeline out of the water because we are on a schedule. And that's not how we can work, right? Like, that's just not how city government could be a little more on top of things, but coming out of a pandemic and with all the transition we're in, you know, it's hard to get ahead of things. And I mean, I think it was good to acknowledge that we don't really have a long-term vision that has been discussed. So on that same topic, we do have some things that are, you know, hanging out there that I think are related to this topic, one of which is our severe weather shelter recommendation. And it does tie into, you know, what is the city's role? How does the city want to invest their you know, limited funding and resources? And what are the city's priorities? And so I believe that is now, for the second time, on the look ahead for the June, is it June 2nd? The first study session in June, which I think is the 2nd, 5th? Anyway, it's the first week in June. So we'll go to a study session, hopefully, fingers crossed, because we got bumped the last time. And I was really pushing for this because last year in June, we had a heat wave and had to open a hot weather shelter. So I think, you know, we need to get this on the council's agenda. We need to get settled with what's going, you know, what's going to happen moving forward. And how are we going to stop having a knee-jerk reaction to these emergency weather events? So as we get closer, which essentially will be, you know, the May meeting, we will probably need representatives from this commission to come to the study session to talk to the council and answer any questions they may have about the process. I mean, and the recommendations that you guys have, obviously, and I'll bring this to the next meeting. I'll have a very comprehensive council communication that will be provided that honestly has the fabulous materials that you all put together and that Echo did a great job of adding footnotes to, so that all of the research that everyone did is linked in that, and the council can see what a really amazing, thorough job you guys did in coming up with these recommendations. So that will be hopefully at the first meeting, not the regular business meeting, but the study session in June. And then hopefully we'll get on the council agenda for, I mean, we'll get direction from the council on what happens next, whether we draft a new resolution for them to adopt that includes all of those recommendations. And so I'll keep you posted and it'll come up at our next meeting. And then other things going on in the world, you know, we are looking at doing another Project Community Connect event, something maybe in the fall, but honestly, that's really challenging. And I don't really have any other reports. I did not make it to the Continuum of Care meeting or the Homeless Task Force meeting this last month. So I'm sorry to not be able to report out on those activities.
Thank you, Linda. Reese, SOU liaison.
Hi, everyone. Hope all is well, because I know I wasn't here last time. I was on spring break. But I sent Echo some things that I was working on last term. For one, I prepared it's essentially like a rough draft for what my capstone will be in the fall about my research project, where I intend to interview some students about their experience with housing and food insecurity to help bridge the commission with the student body. So hopefully that'll be insightful. And I also collected some articles about food deserts that we were working on. And so I've been tasked to continue to do some research to provide you guys with like a really short presentation about what I found. Ideally, it's budget friendly and it also doesn't rely on distributing free food. That was one of the things we talked about in class. So those are some things to look forward to. That's what I got for now.
Cool. Thank you. Chris. SOU program?
So the big thing on campus is President Rick Bailey is going to be speaking on May the 10th from 3:30 to 5:15. I will put the link in chat for you for the live stream as well if you'd like to view that. It's supposed to be some big news. Don't know what's going on, but there's supposed to be some big news about revenue streams and going forward and whatever President Bailey has plans. So I just want to throw that on your agenda. You may want to take a look at that and we'll talk about it next time, but that's the only thing I have right now.
Fabulous. Good job, everybody. Any announcements? Things you want to just make sure people know about? Kathy?
Yes. The Oregon Housing and Community Services is hosting a big hearing May 19th to get feedback on how to spend the $422 million in CDBG funds that are coming into the Valley through the state from HUD. And a lot of these funds are being requested by the LTRG and other community-based organizations and county organizations to be used for affordable housing, specifically to rebuild after the wildfire. So I really encourage anyone who feels called to be there. I will be testifying as a fire survivor And you don't have to be a fire survivor to testify. You can just speak to the need for affordable housing in Jackson County, specifically in the rebuild, in the burn scar. So I'll put the info on that in the chat. And the info about that is pinned at the top of my Facebook page in both Spanish and English.
Oh, very cool.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Gina.
Thank you, Linda. I would actually invite everyone to tune in to May 23rd and 24th from 3:30, 4:30, 5:30, 6:30 to 7:00. The city council will be having extra meetings. We'll be going over the budget, preparing for our new biennium. So it's going to be a really deep dive into unpacking this budget that we have and how can we move forward sustainably. So it's going to be really, really good stuff. So get your popcorn and your pencil and your pad and plant yourself and take some notes. I think it'll really be transparent, and if we can really see how we can move things around and make good things happen. And something I wanted to ask you, Linda Reed, is if it is July or when we do our rent burden, please let me know. And let's see if we can do it at Ashland Hills. If we're going to be in person, let me know. And on that rent burden, I just made a note that maybe we could ask some property management companies, because, you know, when we talk about, I was driving and I heard someone speak about rent going up, and, you know, it just goes up just because it's the same time last next year. So maybe we can invite some of them too.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, hopefully the work group can talk about, you know, what they want to see, and then, you know, how we can link it back to the HPS process too. So how do we incorporate that and address our rent burden and then build on what we've done in years past. So, and I was at I can't even remember what it's called. It's the acronym is CAG, but anyway, it's sort of the regional fair housing meeting. And Meg, who is from the Fair Housing Council, was actually reflecting on going to the city of Medford's rent burden meetings and how they initially had involved a lot of community engagement, and that they've done less of that over the years, and that was the community engagement piece was what she liked. And I told her that I would take that feedback to this group to make sure that we incorporate that as well. So thank you. And I think Gina, you've been a big part of a lot of the planning of those events in the past. So any feedback that you have about things that you thought went well would be greatly appreciated.
Awesome. It would be great to have it at Ashland Springs. That would be wonderful. Okay, so just before we close, I also want to acknowledge Rich, because as we've lost some of our institutional members, we haven't lost Rich, but we have lost him as both long-term chair and co-chair of this commission. So I'm glad you're staying on. But I just want to say what you have done has been amazing. And you're so deeply appreciated here.
Well, you guys are all in my heart. This is what keeps me going. So let's keep going.
Yeah, you are incredibly important to what we're about. I want to just say that in that conversation about the property over on Ashland Street, that Echo has a picture of you back then advocating for this. That was such a statement. Like that's who Rich is in this town and in the world. So thank you for not only what you've done on this commission, but what you just do in the world. We adore you. I think that's it, folks. Meeting adjourned. See you next month.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you all. Good to see you.
You too.